Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the EMG Health Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Sakia, and in today's episode, I want to discuss the response to the pandemic by two particular groups, medical and nursing students, and retiree National Health Service healthcare professionals. The National Health Service, the NHS, has been a source of national pride and gratitude throughout the pandemic. In fact, many Britons consider it a national treasure. The extraordinary efforts of healthcare workers have included medical students entering the workplace well earlier than planned after having their graduation accelerated, and we've also seen retired NHS staff returning as well. Doctors and nurses, past, present, and future, have unified to help tackle the threat posed by the novel coronavirus, despite very real risks to their personal health and career path. I want to discuss the often harsh realities for those entering or remaining in hospitals during what has been, I think you'd all agree, a turbulent and emotional time. Yes, those working full-time as doctors, nurses, physios, and other healthcare practitioners, and the oft unsung army of porters, catering staff, and many others have had to deal with personal concerns for their own safety and to witness, well, some very highly distressing sights. But first, I want to recognise and deeply respect the students and graduates who've stepped into their scrubs earlier than planned. When the pandemic hit, some medical schools approved final year medical students for early graduation. They were then allowed to apply for early provisional registration with the General Medical Council, the GMC, which is the British regulatory body, to help staffing levels during the pandemic. Now, you have to understand this was not a full emergency registration. It represents medical schools moving the graduation of final year medical students forward, where appropriate and possible, to allow medical students to move to provisional registration earlier than normal. The British Medical Association and the GMC has been clear that these posts must have the same induction, education, and supervision expected of a similar post pre-COVID. This whole experience has me remember my own medical school years. The terror, the absolute terror of sitting finals, the trepidation waiting for the results, the relief of passing, and the rites of passage, the graduation parties and the time spent with the people that I'd studied with. The recent crop of medical students did not get to experience any of that. And while at the time for me and my cohort, it was all very tough, there were great memories. And guys, I'm sad for you. I'm sad that you missed that transition. And then after a brief holiday, a vacation, there was that first day, starting as a young house officer or intern, as our American friends say. The thrill of walking into the hospital in a white coat for the first time with my fellow newly minted doctors, feeling eyes on me, feeling immensely proud, feeling scared, rigid. Oh, I have to tell you, I enjoyed the experience so much, I walked in one door, round the corridors, out another, and did the whole thing all over again. And it felt great. Then meeting with the professor of surgery for the first time and having a cup of tea with him, if not exactly as equals, but as colleagues, hearing his sage advice on how to do a job I was really uncertain about and being told that some degree of humility beat hubris hands down. Having the liberty of time to get my bearings, meet the folks who ran the switchboard, saying hi to the porters who move patients around, meeting the nurses who I correctly guessed knew 10 times as much as me. But the current crop of nascent physicians, well, they've been thrown in at the deep end, dealing with a disease that even their most senior consultants were initially in the dark about. Now, there is a parallel to my time. When I graduated, HIV/AIDS was a massive unknown, and yes, we were scared of implications for us while retaining compassion for the patients. We wore masks, we double-gloved, we wore face shields. No one knew. So I have empathy for these brave young men and women. And not just final year students. Some places were even asking, well, students as early as the second year to help out on the wards. And those folks, while probably feeling very, very proud and pleased to help, did not even have the accrued database to know what they're dealing with. I take my hat off to you. I'm keeping my mask on, but I'm taking my hat off. Similarly, nursing students were also encouraged to accelerate their transition from university to clinical practice. At the end of March 2020, the Chief Nursing Officer for England, Ruth May, and Health Education England Chief Nurse, Professor Mark Radford, wrote to final year nursing students to ask them to carry out the final 6 months of their course as paid placements in the NHS to help the health system cope with COVID-19 patients. Thousands of final year nursing students stepped up to the plate and were of paramount importance. Kudos to all of you. Continuing with this strategy, more final year student nurses are being mobilised for continued support throughout 2021's COVID-19 response. The Nursing and Midwifery Council confirmed this January that it will reintroduce emergency education standards to enable final year student nurses to begin paid clinical placements should they wish to. Public pride in the National Health Service during COVID-19 seems to have led to a substantial increase in the numbers wanting to work within our healthcare system. In fact, applications to nursing courses in England rose by 17% compared to 2019. If anything could be considered a silver lining from the past rather wretched year, increasing interest in a career in healthcare could be one. While the campaign of people clapping for the NHS and the display of rainbow pictures everywhere is gratifying, the messages encouraging people to protect the NHS by wearing masks and physical distancing were more meaningful to me personally. And by the way, I can't stand the term social distancing. We need social proximity. It's physical distance we need. A matter of great concern is how COVID-19 has impacted the mental health of all healthcare practitioners, particularly those on the front line. Yes, experienced healthcare practitioners are no strangers to burnout, stress, sleepless nights, and I can freely state that I've had many over the course of my career. But medical and nursing students are dealing with other strains. For instance, they had their education prematurely interrupted and have not had the chance to breathe after completing their education. There's been no respite, no chance to be eased into the cauldron of a busy hospital. The added burden of living through a pandemic and, of course, being separated from family and friends for prolonged periods with no proper downtime to decompress from the very demanding work that we do as healthcare practitioners. Research on what happened during the SARS outbreak, the first SARS outbreak, demonstrated that medical staff who felt vulnerable, experienced a loss of control, or underwent a change in their work were more likely to experience adverse psychological outcomes. Hardly surprising, but a very powerful observation. But these are factors which our newly graduated colleagues will likely become exposed to in their new work environments. We have to gather data to better understand the potential adverse psychological ramifications of the outbreak and then institute proper remediation to support these folks and, of course, be prepared for the next one. And let's be clear, there will be a next one. The resilience shown by nursing and medical students and the willingness to help where they can has shown what our next generations of doctors, nurses, and all in between are capable of. They've demonstrated the tenacity of NHS professionals and have hit the ground running, and I'm proud to call you my colleagues. Moving on now, when the pandemic hit, there was a public appeal for volunteers across society, and the positive response was overwhelming, with hundreds of thousands putting their hands up to help. And who will ever forget the selfless acts by the now late Captain Sir Tom Moore? The General Medical Council, or GMC, granted temporary registration to additional doctors under its emergency powers so that they were able to help with the COVID-19 pandemic. This included 15,500 doctors who'd given up their registration or license to practice within the last 3 years. nearly 6,800 doctors with a British address who gave up their registration between 3 and 6 years ago, and a further 12,000 doctors with a UK address who were GMC registered but who did not currently hold a license to practice. The Nursing and Midwifery Council, or NMC, followed suit with similar measures for former nursing staff, and over 15,000 former nurses and midwives were placed on a temporary register. Returning NHS staff were posted to roles according to their careers and skills, including offering clinical advice over the phone to people who were self-isolating and observing the lockdown. A survey carried out by the Nursing and Midwifery Council last year found that almost half of the nursing professionals who returned to practice to support the United Kingdom's COVID-19 response would consider staying on permanently, again enhancing the building momentum behind the attraction of healthcare careers. In January 2021, the NMC announced the expansion of the COVID-19 temporary register to overseas trained nurses. They're initially inviting just over 2,000 nurses who've trained overseas and are ready to take the final stage of their permanent registration application process to join the temporary register. This is planned to later be expanded to even more overseas trained nurses. I was one of those who approached the GMC because until late 2019, I'd lived and worked in the United States. I was stunned and, well, very impressed by how rapidly and efficiently they handled reactivating my registration, and I then volunteered to help out. I have to say that the most joy I got was working as a porter at a local hospital, helping to deliver scrubs to the wards and various other jobs. Despite spending many years as a surgeon, I learned more about how a hospital really worked doing those tasks and was not surprised to see what a great bunch of men and women labour in those jobs. You rock, guys. But tangible risks come with retirees returning to the workplace during a pandemic. Some physicians and nurses expressed serious concern over their physical and mental well-being, and NHS England and NHS Improvements decided to not ask any doctor aged over 69 to return to practice via the national recruitment initiatives due to such increased risk. And of course, we know that in COVID-19, older people and those with coexisting morbidities have a higher risk from the virus. As briefly mentioned in a previous episode on medical ethics, there are times when certain circumstances mean a patient chooses to refuse medical treatment. And in the absence of cognitive impairment, those decisions are typically respected. Likewise, circumstances arise when medical professionals decline to care for a patient. And this is controversial, but it's generally accepted that a doctor cannot be forced to treat a patient, as well as that freedom of choice being protected by law. During an outbreak or pandemic, doctors may be faced with conditions which are unsafe. Refusal to work may be permissible if the environment contains an unacceptable hazard. The term unacceptable hazard is then the object of discussion. I think that's putting it mildly. Knowing where COVID-19 fits into that scale is not a black and white matter. And how does this apply to physicians who've left the field but are being encouraged to return? Let me give you an example. Availability of PPE, especially the right PPE, caused a lot of consternation. And it wasn't just availability in general. There's issues like the proper fit of PPE for women. Women are not just smaller men. In fact, we did a podcast talking about fit of PPE for women, and it caused us to rethink how such things are designed, because obviously there's a lot of women working in healthcare and they need to be protected, obviously, as well. Our professions, looking after the sick, are, I think, the most profoundly rewarding way to spend one's life. But we must ensure that healthcare workers are protected and respected at all times, not just during a pandemic. One concern I have when this becomes a distant memory, and it will become a distant memory, is that lessons learned will be forgotten. The term never forget is most often associated with the Holocaust, but I think it should apply here too. We have a lot to learn, and we have a lot to remember. I'm out of time for today, but I hope you've, I don't know that enjoyed is the right word, but I hope you've been interested by my musings on the rapid and gallant response by new and returning healthcare professionals during the pandemic. And to the healthcare practitioners listening, like me, I hope you're left with an even deeper sense of pride for yourselves, your colleagues, our professions, those of us who dedicate our lives for others. Please do join me again next Friday for another episode of the EMG Health Podcast, where I'll be speaking with a fascinating guest. Until then, please take care. Bye for now.